two things. What? Yeah, my water well just exploded. It's just water, yeah.
Interesting, I don't know. It's hard to thank yourself sometimes.
Okay, well, why don't we get started?
I think I see a...
Did somebody ring a bell?
I heard the bell. What we're going to do today, we're going to build on the last two sessions. We're going to start with prayer, an awareness and a body meditation. We're going to talk about the levels of health, and that really is what the purpose of today is, to take a look at if you have a sense of your type, what might the next step be in terms of building and growing and developing towards a better understanding of it and closer to God and fullness and wholeness. And then we're going to talk about strengths for the types, but we're only going to talk about three, because we don't have time to talk about all nine. We're going to try to have times for questions for folks. And then we're going to read 9 Ways to Love at the end. We're going to read all that together. Julie has a book, the green book, that she wrote. And those of you who are deciding to keep it, it is $10. So if you can get $10 to her for that. Any other procedural things?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't.
So we thought we'd try, for those of you, you don't have to do this, but if anyone is willing to throw out what they think they might be.
I'm a 2.
We got a 2.
7.
I'm a 6.
I'm a 3. 3. 2.
9.
9. 1.5. We'll talk about that later. Okay, so that's fun. So so let's start with a prayer.
It's printed on your, it's the second handout, I think.
And if you can read what's bold. Oh, no, the opposite. We'll start together, and I'll read what's bold. Lord, make me an instrument of your grace. Where there is unfairness and justice,
let me sow justice and righteousness.
Where there is indifference and coldness,
caring and warmth.
Where there is inactivity and barrenness,
fruitfulness and rich harvest.
Where there is insensitivity and hardness of heart,
feeling and compassion.
Where there is ignorance and blindness,
understanding and vision.
Where there is distrust and unfaithfulness,
commitment and loyalty.
Where there is pessimism and pain,
hope and joy.
Where there is fear and weakness,
courage and strength.
Where there is disagreement and conflict,
harmony and peace.
Amen.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit, and first of all, thank you all for being here on this lovely afternoon that you have off. We appreciate it. So, we're going to talk a little bit about awareness, which is essential to growth in the Enneagram. So, growth happens through awareness, and what you're aware of is your habitual type pattern showing up and causing you problems in the world, separating you from other people in relationships, separating you from God. And I don't know if you remember last time I told you, I always consider that when my fear comes up, it's God's invitation for me to breathe in to the present moment where He is. So when you're aware of whatever it is Even if it's not in your type, because you have all nine types of you in you. When you're aware of something that's causing you problems, that's God's invitation to breathe into that present moment. Three deep breaths, ground yourself, let it go. Okay? Awareness is the fruit of a contemplative prayer practice. A prayer practice used in conjunction with the work of the Enneagram is really transformational. If you want to do your Enneagram work without a prayer practice, that's good. But it's not nearly as transformational. So a prayer practice is powerful. The prayer practice that I have and have used for years, I learned from a dear Buddhist friend. So there's Christian contemplative prayer. There's centering prayer. Have any of you heard of centering prayer?
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same thing. Whatever contemplative or whatever, place, religious place you're in, that contemplative prayer practice is all the same thing. And so I don't know if any of you are familiar with Cynthia Bourgeau. She's an Episcopal priest, and she is one of the core faculty members of Richard Rohr's Center for Contemplation and Action. And she describes a centering prayer practice as strengthening your spiritual muscle to do this. Let go. So what you do is you close your eyes and you go in. And some people say, oh man, I just can't do that because I just can't let go of my thoughts. I've got 10,000 thoughts just coming and going. And she always gives us a little story about Thomas Keating, who is the father of centering prayer, was introducing it to some nuns a long time ago. And one nun said, I can't do this. I had 10,000 thoughts. And he said, wonderful, 10,000 opportunities to bring yourself back to God. So what you're doing is you're just practicing and building your spiritual muscle. So as you see a thought go, you notice it and you let it go. And you don't want to go into the content of that thought, I'm thinking, what am I going to have for supper? I think I'll make some macaroni and cheese. Let it go. You don't want to go into the content of that thought. So what that does is it builds that muscle to do this, to let go. It also builds that muscle of making you aware of what you're thinking. And in that, when you let go, there's a pause for you to choose or discern right action or right speech. So you're not acting before you're thinking. You're not saying something without checking in on your heart. You're not saying something before you maybe do a little inquiry. You're not using discernment. So that contemplative prayer practice used with the Enneagram work builds awareness of when your problematic traits are showing up, gives you the ability to notice them so that you can let them go, and in this pause of letting go, you can check in somewhere in your body. How do I need to react to this? How do I need to come forth in the world with this? So we're going to talk a little bit later about in building your health, building your strengths. In that pause, you can choose kind of four ways on the map to go. And that's the work of the Enneagram. Okay, so right now, we're going to do a meditation to get you in your body. So you might want to put everything on the floor. Ground your feet on the floor, sit up straight, shoulders back, get yourself in a really good place. Close your eyes if you need to close your eyes. Can everybody hear me? Be okay? You can hear me if I use this volume? The directions are you're going to take deep breaths in and out to help you feel into all parts of your body for the sake of being in presence in this moment. Okay. Take a deep breath. Pay attention to your bottom and feel it resting securely in your chair. Breathe down to feel your feet grounded on the floor. Say to yourself, security, security, security. I am security. Security goes with me wherever I go. Take a deep breath. Feel the space behind your pelvis. Say to yourself, creativity, creativity, creativity. I am creativity. Creativity goes with me wherever I go. Take a deep breath. Feel the space in your diaphragm. Say to yourself, courage, courage, courage. I am courage. Courage goes with me wherever I go. Breathe deep into your heart space. Feel your heart. Say to yourself, love, love, love. I am love. Love goes with me wherever I go. Breathe in and pay attention to your throat. Breathe in and relax your shoulders. Feeling down through your arms to the tips of your fingers. Say to yourself, expression, expression, expression. I am expression. Expression goes with me wherever I go. Breathe in and feel into your forehead, the place behind your eyes. Say to yourself, knowing, knowing, knowing. I am knowing. Knowing goes with me wherever I go. Breathe in and feel the crown of your head. Feel the spaciousness of opening yourself to the cosmos. Say to yourself, peace, peace, peace. I am peace. Peace goes with me wherever I go. Amen. Okay. Any comments? I use that pretty regularly. Keep me grounded in my body.
It's a good thing to do right before bed.
Uh-huh.
I think it's also a really good thing because to help ourselves remember our body, what's under our heads. Mm-hmm. And how we move, and how we can access it. Because all those different things she said, each journey you take with this type of meditation, you learn how that accompaniment shifts for you, mm-hmm. and how it feels, mm-hmm. and how it honors all those centers of intelligence that we talked about.
And when you're in that moment of awareness of, oh, this is showing up, you have that pause to kind of do that little radar scan to feel where and discern where what your body is telling you how to act, how to be, how to say, what to do, whether or not to say. For me, it's always, oh, maybe I don't need to say what I always want to say. So right now, there is a horizontal level of the Enneagram. There's a horizontal level of the Enneagram, and that's just knowing your personality type. Knowing the type you are and how other people are and stuff like that. There's a vertical level, and that's where you begin the work. You're going to take yourself from, there's no moving in your level of health unless you do it with intention, knowing the work, accompanied by your contemplative prayer practice. So the vertical dimension is to move up. We're not going to talk about, in your little green booklet that talks about where the red flag is for each type, and the red flag is where you're dropping into these levels of health, which is unhealthy. So there's 9 levels of health for each type, and they're listed in this beautiful book. It's called The Enneagram Bible, and it's written by Don Richard Russo, who has passed, and Russ Hudson, who is still living and teaching and alive and well. So each type has 9 levels of health. The red flag, like I said, is in that green book. And it tells you how you show up when you're moving into the 7, 8, 9 level, which are violation, delusional, and pathological destruction. And this is pathology, and that's a pathological medical psychiatric place that you need to go. But most of us are like right in here. We're at levels 4, 5, and 6. We're at the average level. So if you want to move up from level 4 in balance, where the personality starts to assert itself with striving to support the ego due to falling asleep to the pull of the ego, your ego patterns, your ego personality traits, they're kind of driving the show. You're not really in too much awareness. 5 is interpersonal care. Your ego is really defending yourself. That's that egocentric centricity. 6 is ego overcompensation. And this is where you're going to get into the red flag. Your ego inflation, you're starting to get aggressive. Use of getting support of others in defense of the self. So not only is yourself defending you, you're trying to draw everybody else in to defend you. So obviously, you want to move up. And between 3 and 4 is the wake-up call. And you have to remember when you do this, you're always going to think you're a lot healthier than you are. So Enneagram work takes a lot of honesty and a lot of compassion and a lot of love. So the third level of health is social value. And this is where you're healthy and your ego doesn't show up so much. Your ego shows up lightly with positive impact on society. The second level of health is psychological capacity. This is the beginning of your ego showing up and exerting mild influence. And level 1 is liberation, and Christians say that Jesus was a level 1 person. His personality was transparent, unequivocal acceptance of what is, of the present moment. I just heard somebody, Russ Hudson, I believe it was, said that presence was unconditional awareness of what is. Unconditional awareness of what is in the moment. And so you're at liberation, you're free to be whatever the virtues of all the nine types. You have access to live from that space, that place of being. So, okay, any questions on that?
Quick. Okay, so we're gonna look at three of the points. We're gonna start. We're gonna look at 9, 3, and 6. Mostly because it's the center of each of the three intelligences. For those that you weren't here the last few times, we spent some short time talking about the three triads, which 8, 9, and 1 are the instinctive triad, the body triad. Their main emotion is anger. When they're out away from presence, the feeling triad or the heart triad. 2, 3, and 4. Their core emotion to deal with is shame. The thinking triad, fear, 5, 6, and 7. But the centers are really the hearts of each of the triads. So we're gonna talk about each of those. For those of you who have a green book, it's divided into. Oh, okay. You did this. You were gonna do this. I'll do this.
You want to do the math?
I'll do the math. It's good to be flexible. So each type has its own map of development. It has the vertical piece, but it also has a map on the Enneagram. And we've referred to the Enneagram as a map of numerous times, and that's really the richness in it. Each type has connections to four, so for so 4 points. So for example, the 9 has connections to the 1 and the 8 on either side of it, and those become the wings, which we'll talk about in a minute. They also are connected to, in this triangle you'll see, to 3 and 6. And those are two different types of integration points that offer clues for development, places to explore, clues for you to look at, practices for you to play with in terms of how does this all work together. On the wings, one is usually more prominent than the other. And sometimes that shifts in life in terms of kind of what's going on. What's showing up in terms of the wings. So a 1.5, you know, might be here. Really, the one in the middle is kind of a blend of these two on either side of it. And it takes advantage, carries a limited side to it and also the strength.
So I could be a 2 leaning toward 1 or a 1 leaning toward 2?
Exactly. And you'd have a third wing, too, depending upon where you landed.
And your wings are more subtler types. I mean, like when I'm typing someone, I'll say, they're showing up here, but they're not showing up in the main way. So this might indicate that this is one of their wings.
Yeah.
So do 4s and 5s not have 2 wings because they are really different?
Yep, they do. It's just that there's more to that pattern than we're going to talk about now, but the 4s can have either a 3 or a 5 wing.
Oh, okay.
So they all, and their wings are always right next to them.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
And the wings influence then a little more than some of the other numbers that are part of the triad? Do they influence a little bit more?
There's a lot more clues in them about ways to development.
Okay.
And also ways that keep you stuck.
And you have like more access to them.
That's
you
what
know
I
that's
was
you have more yeah. access okay. to them.
And
the
you can
other parts you can access, but you use different ways.
And you can imagine if each of those have all these levels of development to them, how rich the journey can be, because there's lots of things you can look at. So what we do is on the wings. One opportunity for you is to look at the healthy, how the healthy levels of the wings can help
you learn to move into the healthy level of your dominant point. You know, we're kind of complicated beings. I mean, it's, and each of us has our own way of doing things, and we don't usually do development directly. So this is a great map to say, let's take a journey and see how this feels, or how does this wind tell me that I might be missing my main point, broke in that way. From the wings, the third and fourth connections are these lines here that go down, and each one has two lines. The four goes up to here, has one and a two, you know, so it's in the nine, has the six, etc. And the healthy traits of each of those also can participate. And you have one that might show up at its less healthy levels when you're in stress. We can kind of fool ourselves in how we show up in different ways.
And it's about expanding your view of the world. I mean, if you're just walking the world from your little perspective, that can be problematic. But if you're able to grow towards those four levels, then you can go beyond. You've broadened your view of the world. You've broadened your perception. You've brought in your compassion, your ability to see and understand the way someone else is acting that you just don't get. Yeah. So it's about expanding you.
And we're really good at missing things. So really a nice little practice is just to ask yourself, what could I be missing? What have I missed? Pretty much in any domain you can use that. But that also is very true as you learn your own map of your Enneagram, is to go, I wonder what this line can tell me about what I'm missing about myself, how I'm showing up how I'm deceiving myself, how I'm showing up, or whatever the pattern is of that particular type. Anything else, Jill?
And I guess I would say that we've got traits that we bring into the sunshine, that we accept. We've got traits that we kind of have this like sideways alliance with, and then we've got traits that we totally reject. We just don't even want to see those. And so the Enneagram helps us to see the range and to deal with the range.
Okay. So now, if you have a green book, I'll just tell you the green book. I don't know if those of you that have it, it's really broken into three sections. The first one describes each type. The middle section has some beautiful comparison charts, and the second third section goes through each type in terms of ideas for development. Looking along this, an intro to this kind of a map. So on page 24 is where we have nines. We have a few extra books here if you want to look for the book.
Yeah, feel free to
move on over here. Okay. So a healthy nine is able to access this positive outlook and view of others and their world. They embody this beautiful peace of mind and work to maintain harmony. They tend to merge blindly with the wishes of others that requires them to suppress their sharp edges, which they oftentimes don't see. And they conceal any part of them that might seem disagreeable, easing their own needs in order to keep peace. So they disappear. The journey to wholeness for nine is to let go of their basic fear of losing connection. That their presence is necessary guide to the world to right action. They move from a shattered heart. The movement is from a shattered heart to the benevolent heart. Each type has a little bit different journey in terms of the wound to their heart. This is shattered to benevolence. So the first thing, and using the map, is to take a look at the nine and just really get to understand, if you think you're a nine dominant type, to understand its virtue, understand what it means, what it might look like, how you might notice it. How do you see it in others? Just get a sense of it. So what is it really? And just sit with it. It's a process that takes time. And like Julie suggested, also takes practice that supports it through, a contemplative practice and most likely a companion of some kind to help you really take, gain perspective on it. The next step is to look at the wings. So the nine has the opportunity to really take a look at the ones and the eights. Energetically, all three of them are very different. I'm a nine, as you have heard, and for most of my life, I've been terrified of eights because I don't know what to do with the energy, that life force. I'm afraid that it will break my connection. To take a look at the levels of health, the healthy levels of an eight gives me clues about how I might learn to see myself and what practices I might explore and develop to be curious about how I can access the high side of nine. So it's and the same with one. The one brings a whole different serenity and to the whole picture that helps the nines understand that each type has that. Want to add anything on the wings there, on the nine wing?
No.
Okay, good. And then coming down to here, our nines moved to the sixes. And sometimes we move down the lines depending upon just what's happening, how stressful we are, what's going on in our life, or if our defenses are acting up and triggering. So learning to understand both the nine and the six gives us also ways, clues, to say, well, what can I do? How am I doing that? How could I be wrong? What am I missing?
So look, can I ask a question? Does that mean when it's difficult you present as a six or a three? Or does that mean when things are difficult you
look to them?
To them,
yeah.
And
well,
unconsciously.
Yeah, with the six, this is actually called the stress point for the nine. And what happens when a nine is so much in, is so triggered and is so had by their personality.
By their own personality.
By their own personality.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
They'll, which can be triggered in all kinds of ways.
Right, right.
They'll show up as a average, less healthy level of six.
Right, okay. So then they start presenting as six.
Mm-hmm. They start presenting as a six.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can mistype yourself, actually.
Yeah.
Or a three.
A three is a little different. Julie, correct me if I'm wrong here, or add to it. The three is really not necessarily a stress point, but it's more of an integration point, because nines get frozen because they don't want to cause conflict. And so they disappear. And so one of their virtue is right action. Action is one of three's biggest strengths.
You would go there as a nine when you're kind of comfortable, when you don't want to feel your stuff, which would be the low point of a three.
Yeah. But you can also look at the high points.
Right, for growth.
For
so
growth.
You use it for growth. Or you use it like you're talking about, unconsciously showing up there.
The high levels of three are just amazing in terms of what they can get done.
Right.
And so that adds to the frozenness of the nines and their when they're had to disappear. You have to show up in order to get action done. And so each of those lines has a path to it and clues. This isn't a weekend project. There's a lot of work, but there's a lot of clues there. It's like, oh my gosh, how could I learn? How could my three help me now? How could the high side of six help me? How could my wings help me? And then all of a sudden you have this whole, and notice they're in different centers. They're in different parts of our body, so we're accessing different centers of intelligence.
And when you show up in any four of those connections unconsciously, That's where you're kind of at the average level. And when you use intentionality, to show up, you're focusing on the high side. And there's the growth.
In your book, there's some example of this for nines. So on page 24 again, nines using an eight wing allow themselves to be vulnerable by trusting and caring for others while letting go of their need to be in control. They become action-oriented and committed. They become assertive, direct, and resourceful. They take on challenges and prove strength through action and achievement. Nines using a one wing, they can access this discernment and acceptance in dealing with others. They live in accordance with their consciousness and reason and a strong sense of purpose and conviction. So you can see that that's really is different than nines usually do by themselves. And then, like we said, like we were getting at before, nine using growth to the stress point six, they learn to ground themselves in their own inner guidance. Friendly, trustworthy, engaging. It's that courage. They're accessing a courage piece to go to six. And then that efficiency place going to three. So below that, there's some strategies, examples of strategies for self-development. And there's all kinds of things that you can develop here, either for yourself or in conversation with someone else. One might be to recognize when you discount yourself. A lot of no's, or a lot of nines, have a problem with no's. So one easy way, or one simple step to start watching your patterns is to say, do I say no when I mean no? And notice what's happening inside yourself. Pay attention to what you want in any given situation and make a habit of asking for help when you need it. Typically, they don't do that either. So, rather than reading all of these, it's a really rich by itself. It's a place for reflection. You can go in and you can look at these wings, and then and ask yourself, did I need to be in control today? What did I do? How was I aware? Where did I get stuck? And this map is a like a hanger for it. It's a place to provide specific ways of having particular questions.
Because it makes a perfect triangle with the six and the three, the points, is that a stronger jump? I mean, like you said, the wings of the other part are supportive, but the triangle part, usually a triangle is a symbol of balance, right? It's supposed to be the best balance there is. But, that's why the pyramids were built so well. So
your question is...
So my question is that a greater strength when you're able to go to those points, or not necessarily, as far as going up to healthy?
Because our 9, 3, and 6 are a perfect triangle, the other ones are not.
Yeah. I'm just saying... Yeah.
You mean from these, so you're not comparing it to the wings, to these points, you're asking all around the circle.
I'm really asking the points of the triangle there. 9, 6, 3.
Yeah.
Because a perfect equilateral triangle is considered the strongest base in building.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that there are three aspects on Monday of the map. Mm-hmm. The circle, which means unity, and the triangle, which describes the manifestation of different things arising. And then the rest of this is, it's called the hexad, or it's a six-point star. And it also mathematically has to do with the laws of the universe, that everything is always changing and in flux. So those three things together. And then the 9, 3, and the six are kind of like the grounding things, or the movement along the triangle. Like... you're born, 9 in unity, 3 you move to doing, and or maybe you move to six and then you move to fear.
And they're all divisible by
right.
three.
Right.
I won't go into yeah. it anymore.
The Enneagram is really, really deep, and the symbol, like somebody asked, why is there no connection here? Yeah. This is, when you get into the mystical realm of it, this is where you're growing and you come to the dark night of the soul. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that.
Oh, yes.
And once you move beyond the dark night of the soul, you can finish your journey. So that's you're really going into some
I'm
deep
sorry,
questioning
no,
there.
I
when do. It's not in Enneagram 101.
Okay, thank you.
It's like an Enneagram.
Well, I think what's really nice about that is that you're sensing some bigger spaces out there. Like you're not just being confined uh-huh. to what you're seeing. That feels like an exciting part of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, the movement of it is really exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The way mm-hmm. I think.
But you're thinking really deep there. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's so much to that map. And once,
some of it
once you get to know it, the depth is like, ooh.
I kind of think about it like a museum. You know, you walk around it, and you start to see things, and then you walk again, and you see more, and you walk again, and you see more, and then, or the valley even here. You know, you live here longer and longer and longer, you're probably going to see more. Mm-hmm. And so that's and it's alive, and it moves, and it's, you know, you're up, and you're down. And you don't go up and stay up, mm-hmm. most of us. You know, you kind of tether up, and then you go, you get triggered again, and you go down. It's just this beautiful breathing, you know, this life. And then these wings that go across you, and then these supports that help you go forward, and it's this wholeness. And, you know, like this says, the sacrament of the present moment. How do we really move into it with grace? Any other questions on the nine?
And if... You know, when I used to teach kids who had difficulty reading, they'd come in and they're just so worried that they're not going to get it. And I'd always have to say, trust me, I'm here. I'm here to make sure that you're helpful. And so that you will succeed, that you will learn. And when I first started doing the Enneagram, I was like, well, how do you do this change? And then Helen Palmer, she's a real mystic. She's one of the co-founders of the Enneagram Narrative Tradition. Vic and I studied with her. She's a psychologist out of Stanford. And she just wanted to drive home. If you don't remember anything, remember this. Energy follows focus of attention. So if I'm six, and I just can't do anything right. And just really doubt myself. So in order for me to write that little book, to get out here, to finish all of my work, I had to keep my focus of attention on three. Because here I am a six. And I had to keep my focus of attention on the achiever, the self-confident one, the one that could do it. So every morning I got up and I was like, you have this to get done. And your energy follows your focus of attention. So whenever you're working with one of your four connections, you're going to put your focus of attention on that, on what you're trying to achieve, the high side, and your energy will follow. And you practice, and you practice, and you practice. So we're going to move to the heart center. And this is the three personality. Any threes in here?
Yep.
Threes tend not to perceive their own feelings, so they don't get in the way of things getting done. In demographics, the least studied type is a three. Threes don't have time for this. They've got work to do. They can't feel it. It's going to get it. Any kind of feelings are going to get in the way of their work. They're very efficient. They look very efficient. Just in their appearance. You embody your type in your appearance, okay? They are experts at reading people around them and immediately move into the role that they need to play. They're very image oriented. They want to be seen as successful, so they're working to get your approval. The journey toward wholeness, and this is an average three. You gotta keep that in mind, average or low three, which most of us are on that level. The journey toward wholeness for the three is to accept that everything is unstable and passing, and God gives us the endurance to withstand the passing nature of all things. We can't by our own self do it to make it right.
Writing it down.
We're smart.
The movement is from the empty heart to the honest, whole, full heart. There's this wonderful song by Sarah Thompson, and it says, ring the bell that you can ring, accept your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's where the light gets in.
Leonard Cohen.
Huh?
Leonard Cohen.
Yep. Yeah. Ring the bell. Yeah. So the first part of the three's journey is to focus on their own virtue, which is integrity. Just showing up as who you are every single day, aware of the person that you are. You move to self-acceptance, genuineness, and benevolence. The next step is you're going to start looking at your wings. Broaden your perspective through focusing on the healthy traits of the wing connections that provide them with information on how to deepen the journey. The third avenue of development is to accent the lines on the map. And like I said, threes might go to six and be responsible and dutiful and loyal and honest. Sixes are just honest. My brothers and sisters used to say, you get us all in trouble because you're telling. Or they're going to go to nine and accept the harmony and the unity of all things. Okay, so then on page 30 is the three. Gives you the work for accessing your two wing, and I don't think we have time to get into it too much. And then the three wing, and your work to develop your highest self through going to your nine point. That's your stress point. That's where you unconsciously go when you're all stressed out, to a low nine. Your security point is you go to a low six when you're feeling pretty secure. Strategies for self-development. And then on this page, there's wonderful body work that you can do. Like this stuff from Peter O'Hanoran that we studied with from the Narrative Institute. I'm going to tell you, when my fear shows up, when your stuff shows up, that's pretty anxiety inducing. It's really not, doesn't feel good. And so that's like, okay, do I need like some kind of anxiety medicine? Do I need something? No, there's breath, there's breathing, there's body work for each type. I can tell you when my fear shows up, if I just let it go straight into my belly, stay there three deep breaths until that anxiety has relaxed, I can walk forward. I can move forward. That fear isn't there, or it's not crippling me. And sometimes it's crippling. In fact, when I had kind of my dark night time, oh man, it must have been, I can't tell you how many times every day I feel I'm right here, I'm right now. I'm in this present moment. Nothing is harming me in this moment. So there's body work there. And then there's also some Sandra Matry's stuff for you. So, okay. Any questions on three?
Okay, one more. We're going to go to the six. And the six is on page 36. So So the six has lost the sense of resting in the full presence of God. They forgot they had support and that they have everything they need. So they're vigilant about scanning for insecurity, and they see the world as a dangerous place. Their journey towards wholeness is to have the courage to trust that God is in all things, and the universe and cosmos is a safe and benevolent place. The movement is from a fear-seized heart to the courageous heart. The first part of the journey is to focus on the virtue of the six, which is courage. They move to trust and faith that their guidance and support comes within and through their heart connection to God. They become truly secure with themselves, grounded, serene, and valiant. Wonderful, wonderful, because it's just a wonderful image in terms of that higher sense of, you know, just moving through that. And even what Julie just said about her experience of her dark night, that whole, you could almost see her moving into that valiant place when she was talking. So the sixes are here, the loyalists. They have five as a wing and seven as a wing. Very powerful wings for them. And so as they learn on page, let's see, I guess I said that, on page 36. Thank you. The fives are right here, you know, they're clear-minded. So the sixes can really pull from the fives in terms of this investigation, this pull mind, this innovation, this clarity. They can go to that high side of the five and say, how can you help me come so I can find that courage and that valiance? Where is that clarity coming from? They can expand over into enthusiasts who have this absolutely enormous access to possibility. And they can access that. And their wing, Julia's talked about the last couple days about how she's working on developing her seven wing. We develop different parts of, you know, our wings differently depending upon what's going on. And it's really nice to have two of the same size wings.
I really let go of my seven wing about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was when I quit drinking. And I think that I need to start having a little more wine and enjoying life a little more. And so I'm giving that some real thought. Because I don't do things halfway, I do things all the way. And it was like, well, I'm not a very good drinker. I sometimes drink too much, I'm not going to do that. And now I think, yeah, you know what, I was way more fun. And I had more fun. I think maybe I need to look at that in moderation.
And it's this enjoyment, this way of how do I show up in the world with the breadth that I have to offer. As you access your wings, those positive levels, it gives you, kind of frees you up. Says, oh, I don't have to go, because we, you know, we get that retentive thing going on. You know, we freeze, we get rigid in who we are, and it costs us. We suffer a lot, and a lot of the people that are around us suffer. We cause suffering for other people, and it's really heartbreaking to realize not only how much you've caused suffering for yourself, but how much you've caused suffering for others. And so just this relaxing into it. It's also the invitation, just generally, of course, around the whole Enneagram, all of us, is to just hold this grace of how little bit by little bit we can grow. You know, the process, we go this way, and we might go this way, and then we go this way. And, you know, I mean, you go around, you just do, and then all of a sudden we wake up and we find ourselves, oh, wow, that used to really throw me into a tizzy 5 years ago. And it's not so bad right now. I can relax into it. And I don't have to beat myself up for not having to be here when I was here. That's also a part of it. It's just the human journey of unfolding bit by bit with compassion.
And you know, good things show up that you were just blind to. Like I just had slid in self-doubt and self, oh, you can't do anything right. And when I started meditating and stuff, I became aware, hey, you know what? I'm pretty responsible. I'm pretty loyal and dutiful. I kind of like me. And so it's that journey to, I like me a little bit better and a little bit better. And they say that the anachronism for how you should live in the order of love is love Jesus, love others, love yourself. And in the Enneagram world, we say, love yourself so you can love others, and Jesus will be very happy. Because if you don't know how to love yourself, I mean, I just really did not know how to love myself, and I'm getting pretty good at that. And I'm a lot better at loving other people.
And loving through the centers.
Mm-hmm.
Because loving, we learn in our culture, we learn it in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
At least, well, I should say, we learn it as we leave the young, beautiful crispness of childhood. We learn it goes in our heads. And so this whole part of how does it really feel in our body to love? How does it really feel in our belly to love? How can we really love as, you know, a whole physical being that goes beyond our skin too? It's we're energetic beings, you know. Have you ever been in a room where someone walks in and they're so mad, you can, you can feel it.
Yeah.
They don't have to say anything. I mean, I had a colleague who actually would break machines. Literally, her energy was that big. She would, copiers would break, phones would stop working, we're going, oh no, she's coming in. And it was true. Energetically, she really did. She just has a really big, you know, piece. And Dan Siegel, who's a researcher, brain researcher in California, does this fantastic work around the neuroscience, a lot of that whole field, interpersonal neurobiology, he calls it. And he says, why do we think we stop at our skin? It's just this beautiful kind of flow of, let's kind of get into our bodies first and remember we have it, and then let's see how we can be with each other in a graceful and compassionate way. And we're just in it for a short period of time.
And let's raise the vibrational level of the earth and the energy in the light places.
So we are just going to go through. And then we're going to go through just some takeaways. I know there's a lot of words on here. And then we're going to read this thing together and we'll be done for today. So, I'm going to read it. So the takeaways that we hope you take away is people are born with one main personality type that reflects their motivations and drive their habitual ways of defending themselves in the world. A person's main type resides in an instinctual center and does not change over their lifetime. You want to go either one? You read the second one?
Okay. Not everything in a person's main type describes them. Traits of all the other types are embodied in everyone. This can cause some confusion in determining your type.
The key to determining type is the motivation that causes a person to develop habitual defense mechanisms.
And everything on the symbol has significance.
There's horizontal and vertical dimension of the Enneagram. The horizontal dimension is a good psychological tool in gaining awareness of a person's motivation and habitual behaviors. It can be identified as strengths, weaknesses, and modified through awareness. A lot of organizations will use it at that level. It can be helpful. It just
IBM, Hewlett Packard.
Yeah. The vertical dimension is the key to spiritual growth and transformation. Work on the vertical dimension requires a commitment to honest self-observation, while a daily prayer practice is necessary.
And the bottom line for any spiritual practice, what kind of fruit does it bear? A new you walking in the world? That's good.
Okay, so we're going to read together. Did all of you get a copy of this? And these are clearly the nine. They're nine ways to love. So listen to it, and then we'll read Corinthians together, and then we'll be done. Okay? So let's just kind of not read it too fast. Let's pause just slightly between each one. If I live my life to perfection, doing what is right and good on behalf of others,
but act with compulsion and without love, then I am nothing at all.
If I take care of the needs of everybody in the world, especially the poor, because of my own need to help, but then am without love, even for myself, then I am nothing at all. If I am efficient and successful in all that I do for the sake of justice, but act out of drivenness and without love, then I am nothing at all. If I am cultured and refined and in touch with the pain of existence, but am asking from the pain of persons in the present moment who need my empathy, and if I act without love and compassion, then I am nothing at all. If I have the gifts of wisdom, insight, and understanding, but am not engaged with those around me in the present moment, and am without a spirit of compassion and love, then I am nothing at all. If I am faithful, loyal, and obedient, and never deviate from the law, but am judgmental and blaming, and am without love, then I am nothing at all. If I live in a pain-free world of dreams and plans, enjoying optimism and pleasurable options, but am not addressing present problems and employing people in actual distress, and am without love, then I am nothing at all. If I am strong and powerful, but lose my best self in a spirit of resentment, retaliation, and vindictiveness, and know nothing of the vulnerability of love, then I am nothing at all. If I am settled and accommodating, holding on to a sense of distance and calm, but am not journeying inward to know and appreciate my weaknesses and gifts, and am neglecting my own legitimate calling to love myself, then I am nothing at all. Love is always patient and kind. It is never jealous. Love is never boastful or conceited. It is never rude or selfish. It does not take offense and is not resentful. Love takes no pleasure in other people's sins, but delights in truth. It is always ready to excuse, to trust, to hope, and to endure whatever comes. Love never fails, never ceases.
Amen.